Okay, let's discuss. I want to continue part two. Okay, we'll only just, I don't want to we'll spend maybe a day or two on this. Rabbi Isai, can we begin, please? We'll spend it on this a day or two. Just want to run by a couple of ideas that caught my attention. This is the sefer. It's called Mitzrayim Midrash and Myth, Egyptian Mythology, Rabbinic Tradition, and the Story of the Exodus by Yisrael Kahn. We discussed the Hakdama on Thursday. He is, I don't know, I really, he has a very, he mentions over here in an introduction that he gives a lot of thanks to Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Now, I assume he's not referring to Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Zechat Sadek Levracha. I assume he's referring to one of his grandsons. They have a lot of grandsons, so I don't know who he's referring to, Rabbi Aaron Cutler. And he thanks Rabbi Shalom Kamenetsky. Rabbi Shalom Kamenetsky is the one of the Rosh Yivis in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, he's now the Kamenetsky. I think he's the Kamenetsky Rosh Yivis. His father's name is Shmuel Kamenetsky. Okay, Shmuel Kamenetsky. So this is his son. We once spent time on a book from some, another funny book about Olam Haba. Do you remember that funny that book? Based upon the shiurim that Rav Shalom Kamenetsky gave, describing from all the mystical sources of the Chazal, what is it like in Olam Haba? The only thing I remember at this moment about that sefer is that in Olam Haba there are no elbows. You don't have any elbows. So if you don't have elbows, how do you eat? Remember this? That was amazing. There are no elbows. So try, if you don't have an elbow, how are you going to feed yourself? How do you put food in your mouth without an elbow? You got to feed someone else. You can feed someone else and they can feed you. Only if you do it in this world. If in this world you'll feed someone else, you will merit that someone will feed you. But if you don't feed someone else in this world, you can't expect reciprocation that someone's going to feed you. Remember, no elbows. In the next world, there are no elbows. Isn't that sad?
Who said?
I don't know. That's all I remember. That's all I remember about that sefer. We have to go back.
Who said you have to eat in the next
world? Don't ask me. I told you. I don't remember anything. I have to go back to that. But it was a very, very interesting book. It's a thin little book. Okay, a thin. We should do it again. Maybe a thin little book. It was very. That was based upon the lectures that he gave. He gave a shurim on this. So this fellow, he wrote up his lectures and he put it into a little thin book. Okay, so obviously this person is very well connected. I really don't know who he is. Very well connected to Rabbi Kamenetsky. He mentions Rabbi Aaron. I don't know which Aaron Cutler is referring to. Maybe it's the one who runs Lakewood. He's the one who's one of the big administrators, the CEO of Lakewood. Maybe it's referring to him. I do not know. And he has this beautiful Hagdama from Rabbi Breidowitz. Is my connection?
No, Breidowitz.
Breidowitz from Oris. A beautiful, beautiful Hagdama. Obviously, it's a very, very big Talmud Chacham. Does not need my introduction. And because he's discussing a very controversial topic, he's discussing things that were never done before. Analyzing in great depth idols. It sounds something very disgusting to us to focus. What is the Baal? What is the Asherah? What are all these things all about? We don't even want to think about these things. And even are you even allowed to, according to Halacha, the Torah says you're not allowed to mention the name of Avodah Zarah. So there are indeed halachic issues doing what he is doing. And especially to produce a book like this, he has to go down, he has to go to museums, and he has to go and read a lot of things which are very not proper for a Ben Tari to do. You know, a lot of the stuff out of the Zohar is full of pritzos. It involves things that are not proper to ish in matters of sexuality. Things which are a lot of these things are directly related to one another. He did it. He did an incredible thing, and a lot of things he says I don't understand because it's way over my head. So I just want to show you some things which I'm telling you. Some things are in the sources, and some things are his understanding. Not everything I'm telling you is exactly, it's his chidushim. One chidush which came out, which I found to be very, very fascinating, is that he tries to bring out this point, is that in Egypt, he seems to say is they were very tolerant of other religions. Egypt was considered at the time a modern country. The original civilization started in Canaan. Okay, Egypt is on the border of Eretz Canaan. Eretz Canaan, there were the seven or the ten nations of Canaan. There were really ten nations of Canaan, and we only conquered seven of them. Hashem promised Avram 10 of the nations of Canaan. 3 are still reserved for the future. Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoini. That's only going to come to us in the Mosa Mashiach. And Mitzrayim broke away from Canaan. And they founded their own nation. And they, with that, they brought in their own gods. But their approach was, we're very tolerant of any type of religion. It's, you know, like America. Anyone, freedom of religion. Really, that's what he says. It was a country that was founded on freedom of religion. And the main yesod was, this is an incredible chiddush, and it's very controversial, it's very fascinating. Anything that provides benefit, we have an obligation to serve out of hakara satoif. The ancient Egyptians were incredibly grateful to anyone that did for them a toiva. Whether it was a human being, like Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik comes along and goes and provides them, interprets the dreams of Paro, and provides sustenance, feeds the population of who knows how many people were there at that time. We owe him. We owe him our Karas Satov. Isn't that amazing? Okay, no, today the secular world has a very big problem with our Karas Satov. It's a fact. You're not good. The hand that feeds you, you bite. The whole world is the nature of biting the hand that feeds you. Okay, you give someone so good. The United States, they give the world millions and millions of dollars of financial aid, and they spit in the face. That's a very big problem. Okay, in the ancient world, Mitzrayim, they were very makritov to Yosef. Sheep became, now this is controversial, sheep became an idol. Why did they become an idol? So there's mythology as to what a sheep represents, absolutely, but one of the things that he brings out, I'm assuming it's based upon sources, and he does, I can't remember all the details, is sheep provide wool. Here. Sheep provide wool. Wool gives you warmth. It gives you protection. If the sheep does to me a chesed and provides for me warmth and comfort, I have a duty to be makir toif. I'm not going to kill it. I need its meat. So that's just a violation of basic logic of being makir toif. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. What kind of chutzpah? I shear its wool. I'm nice and warm and comfortable on a freezing cold day. And tomorrow, I stab the animal and I eat its meat. What a chutzpah. So it became an avodah zarah, not because stam, they saw in the stars, the tleh, and they saw the tleh's an avodah zarah, so memela, you are going to be the physical representation, manifestation of the tleh and the constellations. Nonsense. How be practical, just very simple. This little guy over here, he's good to me, I'm going to be good to you. It's fascinating that Kadosh Baruch Hu took us in, put us in Mitzrayim to experience this midah for 200. This is where it gets controversial. For 210 years. See, we go into Golos. Golos is the greatest churban. It's the greatest chil Hashem. It's the greatest nisoyin. But in every Golos, it's a fact. There's a silver lining. The silver lining is there's what to take. There's what to learn. There are things in Golos, and every nation has to offer, which are milos, and we who are the Am HaNifchar have a duty to take those milos and to exploit them for Avodas Hashem. Look at America. There's, without any doubt, everyone says, what has America done for Yadus that we never had until the 20th century? And that is
freedom to worship.
Not just freedom in addition to that. It's that every person can be whatever he wants to be. Every person can reach his full potential. In the United States, the first time, every citizen can be the president of the United States. I'm not doing this in a joke now. I mean it seriously. Every person, you want to be a doctor, you can be a doctor. You want to be a lawyer, you can be a lawyer. You want to be an engineer, you can be an engineer. The sky's the limit. Work hard, we'll help you. We'll give you a loan, we'll give you assistance. We want every person to take what he likes, what he will enjoy, whatever you enjoy, and freedom. We're not going to force you to be the biggest mathematician when you hate math. You, whatever you like, whatever. You want to be a Talmud Chacham? The government will give you money to be a Talmud Chacham also. Okay, whatever you want. You call, the government supports the Kohel law, so we know that. Okay, we'll give you Pell Grants. We'll give you Pell Grants to sin. You want to be a Talmud Chacham? So the government says, we'll give you Pell Grants. As long as you sin in Yeshiva, Yom V'Layla, we'll be very happy to support you. Just don't abuse the system and make believe you're in Yeshiva and you're not make-believe people. It's an amazing thing. What do you have this in ancient times? Not even ancient times. In other times, your father was a shoemaker. That's it. That's your whole life. You're a shoemaker. Sorry, buddy. You're not going to have anything more than that. In Yadus, that translated into a person's mind. What am I? I'm not going to be a Talmud Chacham. I'm not going to be Yerush Shemayim. My father was a simple person. He said if you Mizmam of Tehillim, that's what I'm going to be. I'm not going to even try. Because if your mindset is, if my father's a shoemaker, I'm a shoemaker. My father says the Mizmam of Tehillim, I'll say the Mizmam of Tehillim. I shall learn Daf Gemara. It's not for me. Don't you realize your mind, you're brilliant, you can accomplish incredible things? No, I don't. Because that's the mindset of society until the modern world. America has created this reality. It's an incredible thing in the Geisha world. The simplest person with no yichus who comes, you come from Kenya, you come from the Amazon, you come from Africa, you come from any part of the world. You can be whatever you want to be. And that opens us in our mindset in Yadus. The sky's the limit. That's an incredible thing. So that idea is really a Mitzrayim. What's what he's saying over here in this Sefer? He's saying in Mitzrayim, if you study the mythology, you study the culture, the ancient sources of Egypt, there was a very tolerant country. Any religion went. We're not makbid on only one. In Canaan, it was not like that. In Canaan, the seven Canaanite nations, they had very strict rules. This is the god. There's something called Dagon. There's something called Baal. They're all related. You know, there's a whole family. There's not just them. One god, another god. There's mythology of how they all interconnect. I don't have all the... If you want, I can't understand. I don't really understand. It's too difficult for you to understand. And also, a lot of it is very questionable because there's no text. Everything is hieroglyphics. And hieroglyphics are still subject to interpretation. And they have to look at other records. Whatever it is that in Canaan, it appears they were very strict. You have to follow the certain rules of the gods. These are the gods. Zehu, you deviate, you're dead. No deviation. Egypt, freedom, freedom of religion. Everyone has their God. There's only one condition that in order that your God should get a license. If you want to make a church and have your own God, you need one a license for tax exemption, there's only one condition. Show us what it has done for you. Show us that it is provided benefit, and if it has provided benefit, it's worthy that it should be tolerated, it should be served, and we'll support it because Hakara Satoiv. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Klal Yisrael into Mitzrayim for 210 years. Why? It should rub off on them. The Mida of Hakara Satoiv. Isn't that amazing? Hashem took us to America, the last stop. It should rub off on us before we go into times of Mashiach. Every single person can be the Gadol Hadar. No limits. No limits. That was never true until America. Every person can be the Gadol Hadar. That's what it is today. That's the attitude that changes the dynamics. That's why Chinuch today, we're struggling with Chinuch today because the whole Mesoira of Chinuch, if you study the Chinuch, was you were pre-selected in the crib who's going to be the next Gadol, the next Rav, the next Pesach. And if you were not, you were thrown down the drain. You were thrown down the river. That's the way it was. In the European yeshivas, it's not for everyone. Learning is not for everyone. Not everyone. There's no such thing as no child be left behind. In America, it's like pashatas. No child be left behind. It's like davar pashat. How could you go and deny someone and send someone away? It's a new thing. And because it's so new, it changes. Because since we're so into Mesoira, the way the Tata did it, the way the grandfather and this one. But you have to understand something. This is America. This is not the old school. So things don't sync up, and that's probably why there are so many problems today. Because the system doesn't really know how to deal with the new set of rules that we're so accustomed to. So this is a very big yisoid. That's why he explains sheep and explains the Nile, the worship of the Nile, because the Nile gives us benefit. Sheep gives us benefit. Yosef, wow, look what he did for us, Yosef. We got to worship Yosef. There are other examples. Other examples, I can't remember all the examples, but this is very, very, another very fascinating thing that he brings out. Yosef, we once discussed this when we learned about a prison. I mentioned to you that in Pasuk in Tanakh, you study Tanakh, there are many different terms used in Chazal to describe what is a prison. By Yosef, it's the base ho asuim. Then we have the Beis HaSoar, and then we have by the Mishmar, by the Mekoshesh. He was put in the Mishmar. Yeah. And then, I don't remember, we had many different terms, a whole collection of terms. What?
A bar.
Okay, what else?
Beis Kela,
good. Mishmar, Beis Kela, bar, Sohar,
Asuim,
many different terms. So through his research, he says something, and Yosef was in charge. Yosef was in charge of the Beis HaAsurim. Very strange. It means Yosef was a warden. That's what it means. I mean, let's not make any mistake about it. Yosef was a warden. Wardens have a very bad reputation. They're very mean and nasty. Right? You ever see some good television shows? The wardens are always the real, real nasty, real nasty people. So what is going on? Yosef, he comes down to Mitzrayim. He gets in trouble with the law. He goes to Ishes Potiphar, and then he gets into trouble. So they put him into the Beis HaSoar, and then he becomes the head of the Beis. He becomes the warden.
Yes,
wait, are you in jail or you're not in jail? Yosef commits a crime. Well, they accuse him. He was falsely accused of a crime. Ishes Potiphar. So they lock him up. So which side of the bars are you on? Are you inside the cell or on the outside of the cell? So you would think he's inside, right? He's a criminal. He's falsely convicted of a crime. No, he becomes the Roish.
There's something called a trustee, who is an inmate who has
more privileges.
But it seems, I hear what you say, but it seems from the similarity of the past that he was more than that. So what does he say? So he says something very, very fascinating. Never heard this before.
Makom asher asiri amelech asurim
sham. Makom asher asiri beis amelech asurim sham. Asiri. So he says something I never heard before. It blew my mind. And you only can know this when you study there. You study the history of the ancient Egyptian civilization history. Let's discuss America. In America, what do they call a prison? They call it a correctional facility. Yeah. And what else? They have different terms. There's a very big debate in the courts. This is going on since America started. What is a prison? Is a prison a place of rehabilitation or is it a place of punishment? Right. If a country is a religious country, you have no power to punish anyone. It's not your job. It's not man's job. If you live in a third world country, then there's no belief in God. So then, I'll punish you. You're a Russia. You committed a crime. We're going to torture you to death. We're going to deny you food. We're going to torture you. But if you live in a country that's built upon the foundation that man was created by God, and everyone is the image of God, what right do you have to punish someone else? What right do you have to deny a person food, to deny him sleep, and to torture him? He's a criminal. He's a danger to society. Okay, so we're going to keep you locked up. We don't want to let you loose on society. We're not going to punish you. Where we keep you locked up, we'll give you good food, give you television, let people come visit you, we'll give you a college education. You'll have a good life. Because we have never a right to punish you. We can't let you out into the world. You're a danger. And we have to use you as an example. Other people should not commit crimes. But we're not here to punish you. Adarabah, we're here to rehabilitate you. If you are not capable of receiving rehabilitation because you're so fakrim, you're so meshuggah, so at least we'll just lock you up. And this is nogei halacha l'maaseh in America, how far the government has the right to torture people. To torture people and to deny them basic rights. Solitary confinement. What right does the government have to put a person in solitary confinement? Just to punish him? You have a right to punish another person? You have a right to put a person to seclude him, to keep him outside of society. You have a right to punish him? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. This is an ongoing issue in the United States for years and years and years, and it totally changed the dynamics of how the purpose of prison, and this goes on throughout the entire world, and the United States, by their lead, by their power, their influence, is telling the world basically, more or less, is that, ruba druba, we have no right to punish human beings. We're not God. We're just there to keep society safe. We have to put these people away and just give them a life. Give them a life and let them not go cause harm to other people. It's a very powerful idea. In Egypt, they were so sophisticated. It was even more than this. Do you believe this? This is what he says here in the book. Not only did they view prison as not a place to punish people, it's a place to rehabilitate their soul so it can enter into the next world. Because they believed in their false. Okay, let's not. This is why I see why it's so controversial. You're giving Egypt a little bit too much credit. Is that they had gods? They believe in this god, Echrei, all these crazy gods. I don't even know what they're all about. These gods. And the soul after it dies, it goes into the next world. It's damned, right? A person committed a crime. He's guilty of adultery. Your soul is going nowhere. Your soul is going to Gehenna. You're finished. We don't want your soul to go to Gehenna. Egypt took responsibility that the people in prison should not go to Gehenna after they die. So what was a prison? The primary focus of prison was spiritual rehabilitation. Not in America, it's rehabilitation so you can one day enter society. We don't care about society. They cared about the next world. Yeah?
Our description of Mitzrayim is steeped in
promises. Ervas Haaretz. Exactly the problem with that he's always, it's a double-edged sword. This is what makes it, this to me is amazing. It totally changed the dynamics of what Mitzrayim is. And this is why Hashem put us in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim on the one hand is the worst of the worst. It's the worst of the worst. It's the Ervas Haaretz, steeped, heavily steeped in Arayas, in Znus. But yet, they were so much on the right track to Yadus, of what the whole purpose of this world is. So that combination can be even worse, because it creates a corrupted version. It's one thing if you live in a pagan society, go much of a shogayim, okay? Or you live in a materialistic society. No one cares about Hashem. So it's very easy. You know, but in America, Baruch Hashem, B'li Ayin Har, Chasdei Hashem, it's easy because most people, they're just too busy with their smartphones the whole day. They don't have time to think about religion, about Hashem, this, that. So we look at them, they're zombies. The whole America, everyone is a zombie today. Everyone is running after money, running after typhus, running after this. There's no religion. So it's very easy. What's the only real meaning of life? Yeah, just religion. So it makes it easy in a certain way when everyone is crazy. But in Egypt, they weren't so crazy. Hakar Satoiv. They're concerned about their souls after it dies. It's an awakening. Wow, you know, we got competition. But the problem is, they're corrupt. They're misguided. And they take taiva. They get way carried over into taiva. They don't know how to deal. They're not even capable of dealing with Hashem in the proper Torahic way. So the combination can be lethal. It's like you're legitimizing. It's a religious legitimization of things which are. It's a very delicate balance between recognizing that it's the lowest of the low, steeped heavily in the worst sins in the world. But yet, they have ideas, hasagos, which are very much in line with Yadus. It's specifically here Hashem had to bring us, because this is the ultimate training ground. This is the ultimate playground, where you're able to magnify, to see where you go right and where you go wrong. It's amazing what's going on. Now let's get a load of this. What was a prison? The prison was a place primarily of spiritual rehabilitation. In America, a prison, and a good prison in America, Rahman al-Islam, is a place of rehabilitation. The bad prisons, they couldn't give a hoot. Okay, Rahman, we all know here the horror stories. Rikers Island, they say, is mamish dysfunctional, like you can't even imagine what goes on in Rikers Island. It's like unbelievable, like shutting it down. It's crazy. And then there are places, you know, where they rehabilitate people. They give them degrees, they give them skills, so they can one day go into society. What about religion? Yeah. That's a secondary thing. Someone who wants a chaplain, you want someone to talk to you about religion, they'll do that also. In Mitzrayim was just the opposite. The focus was religion. We have to rehabilitate your neshama so you don't go to Gehenna. On the side, we'll help you just get ready for the outside world. Who was better? Who did they recognize was the ultimate Rebbe to rehabilitate the souls of all these lost people? Yosef. The whole prison was to rehabilitate the person's peace, these Egyptians, these national neshamas. This Yosef was a spiritual person. Elokim yaneh es shalom paro. Why did Yosef talk religious talk? Ever wonder? Paro, I have a dream. Chalem chalamti v'ini yadeh mahi. Oh, I heard about this guy Yosef. He's going to come to talk to Yosef. He talks religion. Why is Yosef talking religion? That's my job. Because when I went to prison and they saw that I sinned with Ashes by Tifa, wow, that's pretty bad. Okay? Arias, he's someone else's wife. Whew. You really need spiritual rehabilitation. And after talking to him for 5 minutes about his Averis, they realize he's more religious than all the priests put together. If you're more religious, know more about rehabilitating your neshama than all of the chaplains in the prison put together, why don't you give the shir? And indeed, he started giving the shir to the other inmates. And then, you know, he's now going to be the Rosh Shiva here. And he's going to be the Magid, the Baal Musar. And it was phenomenal. Because Egypt had to show, what was the prison? You know, in order for the government to pay the bills, government, you know, the budgets, $1 billion budget, the prisons. In order, they have to show that they're accomplishing, they're successful, they are rehabilitating the souls of these poor fellows. This guy's the person, it was a gift, it was a blessing for them. Look who we got. We got here the biggest Baal Musar money can buy. He's here in the prison. He's going to be doing all the work for us to rehabilitate these people. That is the reason why he rose to the top of the prison. When you understand what the purpose of the Beis HaAsurim was for, you understand why it was so natural for Yosef to rise to the top. And now you understand why it's so natural when the Sar HaMashkim, the Sar HaOifim, when they come with their problem, he talks to them Elokim, he talks religious talk because that's exactly the position that he was in. They came to speak to the rabbi about their problems. It changed the whole dynamics. Another quick thing. When his brothers come, what is that? I always learned all my whole life is that when the brothers come, he tells Pyro, what do your brothers do? Oh, they're herdsmen. They deal with the shepherds. They deal with animals. So I always thought, like, that's the worst thing you could say to Para. Right? That's the worst thing. Because the Seh is an Avodah. The Seh is, a shepherd was someone, the Seh was an Avodah Zarah. Was it? What? Oh, what was the purpose? So how do you understand it? Exactly, right? So that, I mean, basically, it means, it was like, the Nebuchs, like these people in Egypt, I always understand, maybe I'm totally wrong, I was correcting my thing. In Egypt, to be successful, I was just giving words, you have to be in finance, you have to be a doctor, you have to be a big lawyer, you got to be a big macher. Guys, they're a bunch of Nebuchs, my bros. They're a bunch of, what do they do? They're shoemakers. I don't know, they're nothing. They're garbage. And Yosef, you're a vazir, your brothers. You should say, Paro, my brothers, they're so brilliant. They'll get a perfect score on the LSAT. They'll get into Harvard Medical School. They're geniuses. No, he's mamish mevaza them. He says they're mamish a bunch of nebuchs. And he took only five brothers that were talking to the weakest, to put them before Paro. Why? Because Yosef wanted to protect their neshamas. He wanted the Paro to tackle the nebuchs. So you know what? I'll sponsor the Koilel. Let them go to Goshen. We'll make the Koilel of Goshen. And they'll sit and learn there. And they won't bother anyone. Yos Baruch Hashem, the plan worked. The plan worked. I may believe the Nebuchs. So they can go to Koilel Goshen. And no one's going to bother them. Wait. Give me a second. I don't have time. You have to wait a second. I'm sorry, okay? You got to put your hand down. You're making me nervous. Going to Koilel. They love you here, Yishnah. They all love you. Don't go tell me about Lashonar. So they're going to Kol Goyeshen. That's how I thought it. Pum Fakert. Who had the greatest covered in Egypt? Who were the people that were the celebrities? The Elvis of Bavel. Of Mitzrayim. Study the culture. Study It was shepherds. Shepherds were gods in Egypt. Because the Seh is Avodah Zarah. Anyone that was involved in raising and caring for the Seh was automatically a celebrity. You are a celebrity. Yosef gave his brothers, Mamish, look at the Midah Keneged Midah. His brothers tried to kill him, throw him into a pit. They wanted to kill him. And Yosef, I'm not like you. When you come to Egypt, I'm going to make sure that you're going to be viewed by the population as celebrities. Because in Egypt, study the culture, the Seh was Avodah Zarah, and by extension, those who took care of the Seh were elevated in the eyes of the population. Adam Choshev, they're the best shepherds. And that, and indeed, he succeeded. His brothers were held in the highest esteem. Isn't that amazing? The Midah Keneged Midah. You try to kill me, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to elevate you to the greatest people who you recognize. It changed the whole dynamics of what we understand. What we understand.
I can point. I tell me point.
Yeah.
In Masechet Shekalim says when the lechem aponim and Ketoret, they didn't want to teach. They brought people from Alexandria, but they didn't know how to make lechem aponim.
Okay.
But they didn't know exactly the point. But they were taking the halom, lechem aponim, bit of broken. And all Ketoret also, they bring people from Alexandria that they did know how to make, because they, those who were, they didn't want to teach the other.
Okay, okay, so we are out of time, but I'll tell you just to rush for the Wilhilti tomorrow. One just to rush for 10 seconds, what we'll do tomorrow. Yosef, there's now one of the ancient idols of Yosef. Before Yosef arrived on the scene was this thing called Osiris.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, Osiris. What is Osiris? So there is only, there's an entire mythology associated with Osiris. This part of the story, and it's not, but part of the story is this: there is a god called, it's a combination of two gods. Part of the story is there was a god, I don't remember all the names, who was killed, who was taken by his brothers, and they killed him. They threw him into the Nile, and then the brother, this brother was resurrected, and he came back, and he did something. I have to review the entire story. Yosef became an idol in Egypt is because his story of what happened to him, that his brothers sold him as a slave. He comes down to Egypt and he had a whole mice with Ashes Paitifa, which is also part of this god of Cyrus. The god that comes with two gods also had a whole mice with an Ashes Ish, a whole story. And then he resurfaced and he resurrected himself and he became the power and the judge of Egypt. His personal story, this is an amazing thing, is perfectly in line with this god, the mythology of the god that Osiris represents. When the people stood back and they looked at Yosef, even really after he died, they said, wait a minute, this man, Yosef, was the physical manifestation in this world of Osiris, which we've been reading about and believing since we're children. When we were in kindergarten, they taught us about this god called Osiris and the story. A god was sold by his brothers for 28 years. He was 28 years old. And then this happened and that happened and that happened. Wait a minute. It's exactly what happened to this guy, the Mishnah Lamelech. The Mishnah Lamelech, the guy that's in charge of the country. He was sold by his brothers. He came into Egypt. And then he was in jail. And he did this. And then he had a mice with Esh Potiphar. He went into jail. Then Pyro called him. I don't have to go through the details. There were such incredible parallels between the life of Yosef and the belief in this crazy make-believe God that the Egyptians believed in. They rest. Wait a minute. This is Osiris coming to life. This is he's been reincarnated in the form of a human being in this event, and therefore he became an idol. They didn't just worship Osiris, the concept of Osiris, in the sky, they worship Yosef, Mamish, because his life story paralleled to what existed before. And that became a very big problem, and the icing on the cake over here is, you know who began to worship him? Klal Yisrael began to worship him. even the Jews began to worship Yosef. When it says by Kriyas Yamsuf, Halalu Oivdi Avodah Zarah, this is mind-boggling, this point. Halalu, this he says this. And I call him, Halalu Oivdi Avodah Zarah, Halalu, right, the Kriyas Yamsuf, yeah. Why should we split? Halalu Oivdi Zarah. What were they worshipping, the Jewish people? Pesel Micha? Not necessarily. Yosef! You know why the Yam did not want to split? Who is it? The Aroine Shel Yosef. The Geshka is mamash here. They're crossing through the Yam. Micha was hiding in his pocket something, right? He was able to pass through the metal detectors. He got something in his pocket. But Yosef, Vayikach Moishas, Atzmos Yosef. Mamash the Avodah Zarah, Yosef, this is Osiris. And the Jews, they were on a very low level. They were very shvach level. Halalu. The Ganse Klal Yisrael is worshipping Yosef. They're part of the culture. But look what's so mind-boggling. Why did Moshe Taka take him out then? If he's the big Avodah Zarah, the big Nishal, why? Because Yosef was oimed in this sign of Ashes by Tifar. Only in Vaimara Vayonos, Hayamra, Aroyna Shel Yosef, in the Zuchus of Yosef that was oimed in the Nisoyin of Ashes by Tifar, that's why Klal Yisrael was saved. How could it be both? How could Yosef be the source of all their problems and be the singular zuchus that enabled them to cross? That is the complexity of what the whole Mitzrayim represents. Mitzad Echad, they are the worst of the worst of the worst. Mitzad Sheni, there's something there. They're on the right, they got something which is ideal. It's what we're trying to learn from. Yosef himself is the problem, but Yosef is the zuchus that he crossed the Yam Suf. How do you go and know how to take what's right and what's wrong? This is the Nisayon of Klal Yisrael. Stop here. Tomorrow we'll continue.